Okay, we're just coming up on 7:30. So, as usual, I'm going to mute all, and you will have the ability to unmute yourself. Please feel free to do so if you have a question or comment, and remute yourself afterwards so we keep background noise to a minimum. And later on this evening, contents of the deck in PDF format, the audio track, and the contents of the chat window will be going up on our website. So we have a good number of items on for tonight, so I'll turn it right over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, I'm going to start off with a follow-up on the Zoom client stuff I did last week. So you remember that you can actually install the Zoom client on your PC. You just need to download it from zoom.us. And one of the useful features which some people use and some people don't seem to is the chat window. Because when people are talking, when people are speaking to the slides, you can actually ask for clarification. If somebody asks a question, you can provide an answer to it, or you can ask an entirely new question. And basically, when I'm talking, Chris is monitoring the chat window, and when Chris is talking, I'm monitoring the chat window. So we're always looking for questions, and we'll break in if necessary or come back to questions later on. So that's basically what the chat window is used for. And on my screen, I'm looking at something like this. Or at least you would be if you were watching the Zoom session. You'd see the presentation slide in the main window, the list of participants, which you can make single or double column or multiple column. And you can actually launch the chat window from one of the icons along the bottom of the screen there. And then you will see this box on the lower right-hand side, which I've dragged it to, which contains the various contributions from various people. So, excuse me, for example, when we start off the evening, Chris normally posts a message, something to this effect. And one of the things it says is, feel free to use the chat window to comment and ask questions. And so if you want to use the chat window, down the bottom of the screen, you'll see this area right here where there's a blue box, which is who you're sending the message to. And then an area where you can actually type your message. So by default, the message when you send it will go to everyone. So you'll see in the blue box it says everyone. But there is a drop-down menu there, which we'll take a look at in a second. So if you send the messages to everyone, then you get the widest audience. Everybody who's on the call gets to see, or potentially gets to see this if they've got the chat window open. So there's a bigger chance of somebody knowing the answer to your question. However, when you're typing, it's very tempting to type a line and then hit return and think you're going to type another line. Trouble is, when you hit return in the chat window, it's like pressing the send button. So you actually send your message if you hit the return key. And so it's best to just keep hit the period space and then type your next line and only hit return or send when you've actually finished the whole message. And it's not really a big deal if you send it by mistake, then you can just send a second message. And if nobody has commented in between times, your messages just double up essentially, and it will look as though you've got two separate lines in the same chat box. Now, one of the things about using chat is it's very customizable. So, for example, you can change the size of the box just by dragging on the various sides, make it wider or taller, or just make the whole thing bigger or smaller by hitting on a corner. So that can be very useful to make it as big as you wish, but still be able to see anything else on your screen that is of interest to you. You can also customize the message text. And you can probably see here, I've actually used quite a large font. And that's because down on this lower level of the message box, there's a bunch of icons. And this pencil icon is essentially kind of an edit or formatting type option. So if you click on that, then you'll open up this ribbon. And now you can see that you can highlight text and boldface and italicize it. But notice that you can also change the size of the font or change the color of the font, for example. So I use the size of the font here and made the thing quite big so I can read the text very easily. And the second icon along here is for emojis. So if you pop this guy open, then you can choose one of the smiley faces, or if you go down, you'll find there's a bunch of animals. I couldn't find an elephant to remind you about things, so I have to choose the wise old owl to customize my message. But I can also use this icon to insert a file. So if I click on that, then it opens up File Explorer. I can choose an image file, add that to my message, and now I've got my message text, I've got an emoji, and I've got a image file, which is showing up as a thumbnail. And then when you when you're in the text message window, the chat message window, and you're looking at one of the messages, you'll see some icons below it. This guy right here is a reply. So it's like a threaded conversation type thing that your reply gets tagged onto the message. So here I'm replying, and how can I forget? And here's your homework for tonight. When you're playing around with the chat window icons, you have to find out what these two guys do. And maybe you can do a follow-up for us next week and tell us what they are and if you find them useful. Okay, next thing, remember we were talking about everyone and this drop-down menu here, the chevron. If you hit the chevron, then it pops up this box right here, which basically lists everybody who's in the meeting in alphabetical order, except Chris is at the top because he's the host. And this was done when Adam Hunt was making his presentation on free software, and he was a co-host. So the host and co-host get listed first, and then all the attendees are listed in alphabetical order. So if you want to send something to a particular individual as a direct message, then you choose their name and click on it, and you will choose to send a message, for example, to Chris. Now, the thing is, now, once you've chosen to Chris, that becomes sticky. So he becomes my sole correspondent. So if he answers me and I send something to the general public, if I haven't changed this box, then that message will only go to Chris, and because the two is sticky. So once you've finished direct messaging, don't forget to change this thing back to everyone using the chevron so that you can send messages to everybody who's attending the session. Now, the next thing, final thing I wanted to say is that chat actually does work. So when Adam Hunt was giving his presentation on free software and Linux, there were a bunch of questions, and Chris had a question about Caliber. Does it handle all ebook formats, including Amazon's? Bob Harris wanted to know about Adam's YouTube channel, and Bill Van Dyke wanted to know about a Linux version that ran Windows better than other things. So these last two questions were brought up to Adam at the end of the session, but Chris's comment question here, as soon as he posted the question, he actually got some replies. So Bob told him that Caliber will do EPUB and Kindle. It has a built-in editor. Jose said it also supports Amazon formats. And Tom noted that if it's digital right management protected, an EPUB, then you need an add-on to remove that. And he doesn't think there is one for Amazon. So if you ask a question, it's quite likely that somebody will provide an answer. And if they don't, then, as I said, Chris and I are monitoring the chat. So we'll ask the question or respond to the question later on in the session. Okay. Chris hasn't broken in, so maybe there's nothing else there.
Nope.
Okay, so a follow-up from last week. Jeff had asked about disabling his phone's proximity sensor because he has limited vision, and in low light conditions especially, he has to hold the smartphone close to his face so he can read it. But when he does that, the proximity sensor essentially turns the display off. So he's asking, how can I disable the proximity sensor? Well, again, in the chat window, Tom had posted a link, and the link gave some instructions about that there might be a setting to disable the proximity sensor, but he noted that it might depend on the version of Android or the version of the phone that you have, so it may or may not work for your particular phone. And sure enough, when I checked after the meeting, I came across this link where he said, for certain phones, the only way to turn off the proximity sensor is to turn off all the other sensors. And that gets rid of the microphone and the camera and all kinds of things. So probably not a very useful option. So that was a thing to check, but Jeff did actually check, and his phone was one that didn't support that setting. So I think he's lumbered with his old phone and old Android. The other thing that was asked was, how would you check a suspicious link on a phone? Because you can't really hover the mouse over the top of the link and it will show you what the link is. But it turns out, rather than tapping on the link, which will actually open it, if you long press it, you hold the link down, you hold your finger down on the link. If you do that, then it will pop up this menu bar, and it will tell you what the link is, and it gives you some options. And one of the options is copy the link to the clipboard. Because once you've copied it to the clipboard, then you can use the techniques in the next link, which is to use a link checker. So you could basically paste that link, which you just copied to the clipboard, into something like VirusTotal, and it will tell you what various search engines think about that link in terms of being good, bad, or indifferent. And there's all kinds of other options there. Make sure it's using HTTPS and et cetera, et cetera. So you want to take a look at how to check suspicious links on smartphones, then there's a couple of links which will help you possibly do that. I just noticed here that the other things it talked about was looking for contact information. So is this message really coming from a friend, or is it somebody, is it a hacker who's pretending to use a friend's email address or whatever, phone number? Look at Google reviews for websites. They will tell you sometimes whether they're good or bad. And you can do a Whois search to check on who owns the domain, how long it's been in existence, and those kind of things can give you clues. And the other suggestion was to utilize a backlink analysis tool. And there was a suggestion of one of them to use. So I tried that, and it turns out it didn't work on OPTUG.ca, for example. It didn't work on some of my websites. And in fact, I couldn't find it any .ca website where the thing would actually work. But it did work on a bank.com site. And so I guess that's at least an option for some sites, but probably not for others. Okay, so that's how to take a look at suspicious links when they arrive on your phone or Android device. Okay, next up, a question came in from Lorraine, and Chris is going to talk about this.
Yeah, Lorraine is on the call tonight, so there's a clarification I'm going to ask about in just a minute. But so the query she sent in was that as of April 2024, starting up the computer, got a weather pop-up at the center bottom of the screen, and it disappears when getting to the login screen. And the question was, where did it come from? Didn't actually request it. Is Microsoft foisting things on us as usual? How do I turn it off or prevent it from popping up? And she noted that it has nothing to do with the taskbar widget for the weather, which has always been disabled. Next. So this maybe can be fixed using the personalization feature. I say maybe because this is something that perhaps Lorraine can clarify on that. I get it on the lock screen, the weather, but it doesn't disappear when I get to the login screen. So it appears when the login screen is on there. So Lorraine, if you wanted to clarify whether that really is disappearing at the login screen or not. But I think that this is what's happening. And if you go to settings, personalization, lock screen status, next, you'll actually see an option there for what will we get displayed. And it says that choose an app, to show on the lock screen. And next, if you actually click on that option, you have an option of having none, mail, calendar, or weather and more. And more is whatever Microsoft decides to put on the screen, I guess. It used to be just weather. And you could have the weather appear, and then all of a sudden they decided to add additional things in there, stock market and some news or something like that, or sports. And I was a little bit annoyed that they took away the option to just have the weather, but so be it. Microsoft has decided that that is all you can do with it. So, yeah, Lorraine, if you can clarify if it really is on the lock screen or if it disappears at some point, that might help to say whether that is likely to actually fix it or not. But that for me is where I end up seeing the weather.
So Bob's saying that on he gets the same thing on his lock screen, but he's getting the weather from Portsmouth, UK, 90% of the time, and only 10% the Ottawa weather.
Yeah, there's a I had this for a little while where it was showing incorrect information, and I found I'm just trying to think of what I did to fix it. I did eventually fix it. It was somewhere else you had to go in and set the default location for weather, and I don't think it was in the weather app. It was in a widget somewhere else. I'll put it on my list of things to look at and maybe do a follow-up next week if I can figure out what I did to fix that. So if other people are having problems with displaying the weather from the incorrect location, hold on to your hat and maybe we'll have a fix next week.
So Carol's asking,
If I may, sorry, yeah, Chris,
Yeah.
the thing is I didn't change anything. Like it just appeared all by itself. So I
Yeah.
don't know what's going on there. So I'll go and see personalization, but, and also it's all in Fahrenheit. And I
Yeah.
thought, well, at least if it was in centigrade, it'd be easier, it'd be better for me, but I can't even change that because I don't know where it is. So I'll
Yeah.
try
The
personalization and see
personalization,
what
you should be
happens.
able to set it to none or to just calendar or mail. But the reason why it got turned on is because Microsoft, in its infinite wisdom, decided that they enhanced it from being just weather to weather and other stuff. And when they did that, they decided that everybody is going to want to see this new functionality, and you would never discover it accidentally by, moseying around in the settings, personalization, lock screen status. So they very politely decided to turn it on for everybody.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
So, Chris, Carol's asking, what does the lock screen add to personalization?
Lock screen add to personalization. I'm not
It's probably the other way
sure.
around, right? How do you personalize the lock screen on? What
Yeah.
personalization do you have on the lock screen?
Yeah, the only things you have are what you can see on the screen there. If you go to that settings personalization lock screen, it actually shows you all of the options that you can turn on or off. on the lock screen, and you can choose any or all of them however you want. You can have Windows Spotlight, which will give you a new photo every day, or not every day, every couple of days they give you a new photo. You can have a static photo that you choose. You know, there are various options on that screen that you can change. Seems to personalize without lock screen. Yeah, I'm not sure. Carol, are you saying
I have a photo on my desktop, a personal photo, and I never heard of the lock screen. I just went to themes or all of those choices that they give you. So I was wondering what the benefit of the lock screen is.
Are you saying you never get the lock screen?
I said I've never touched okay. The lock screen. I personalized.
If you never get the lock screen, it means you are auto logging into Windows without and that, generally speaking, from a security point of view, is not a good thing. It means that anybody who turns on your computer will get logged in automatically.
So I have to put in a PIN.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the lock screen, is when you are prompted for the PIN. That's the lock screen in Windows.
Okay.
I think what Carol means, Chris, is that she's actually use one of her own photographs, and that's all she sees on the lock screen.
So you're saying that the lock screen is a security thing, not a personalization thing. You can personalize
it is a security thing in that it's where you log into Windows, but it can be personalized to show you various things on that lock screen. So you can have it Windows Spotlight, which is them sending you a new picture every few days, picture or a slideshow. You can point to a folder of containing pictures, and it'll just randomly cycle through those. Or you can have it display icons at the bottom for mail, calendar, or Windows and more, whatever Microsoft decides more is at any point in time. And then they have an option, show the lock screen background picture all on the sign-in screen. I have that turned on, so it's just basically showing, a picture in the background. So it's just it is the security feature of where you log into Windows, and you do have the option of doing some personalization on that screen. That's all.
And the good news is one of the options is none.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris. Second question that came in was about WhatsApp. This individual is going with a tour group, and the tour group wants everyone to use WhatsApp, WhatsApp Messenger, which is a real-time messenger type service, so that they can communicate with each other. But the individual wants to know what should they know before they say reluctantly downloading the app. And if they remove it, does it remove everything off the phone? So if anybody's had any experience with WhatsApp, good, bad, or indifferent, or can comment on those things, now's your opportunity. I will throw my 5 cents in. I've actually been using WhatsApp for a few years now. We have a local Rarebird alert system which runs under WhatsApp, so I use it for that. But I also have used it to talk to people on the phone or video conference, and that seems to work. Both of those things seem to work really well. One of the good things about WhatsApp is that you can talk to people internationally if they have WhatsApp, and it's basically no cost because you're doing it over your Wi-Fi connection. They say that messages are end-to-end encrypted, so in other words, the messaging is secure. Clearly, I have no way of verifying that. The only downside I've seen is that occasionally I get some unknown individual trying to contact me. But there is a way to just block people, just like you can with phone numbers. You can block WhatsApp contacts, and they go away forever. You never see them again. So that works well. And in terms of uninstalling it, it's really easy to clear the entire chat item of everything, messages and videos and JPEG images and anything that any media that's been attached to the messages, there's the three vertical dots menu, and then you go to more, and one of the options on the more is to clear the chat, which clears everything. And I would think that, I've never done this, but I would think that if you uninstall the app, just like you do any other app that you've installed on the phone, if you uninstall it, I would imagine everything goes away. But again, I haven't done that. I wouldn't really know how to find all the junk if there is any junk left over. The Android file system, as everybody probably knows, is really quite complicated. Fortunately, phones have lots of memory these days, so if you get a bit of junk lying around afterwards, it's not really a big deal. Okay, Carol's saying she's used it with people who travel abroad and they can chat for free. So that's kind of along the lines of what I've been saying. So I think the app, you know, generally I think it's a well-known, well-used app, and is probably quite kosher. Okay, if anybody has any other comments, put them in the chat and we'll get to them later on.
Just one comment there, that WhatsApp does use your data plan. So if you're on a very restricted data plan, but I would think that it would not be using a huge amount of data.
Well, unless you're doing video conferencing.
True, yeah.
But you should restrict that to when you have a Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah.
Okay, next up we have item from Bob Harris. And Bob's in the process now of lighting up his screen. And he'll be ready to talk to us directly.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Do you see your screen now in focus?
Yes, we do.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a good sign. Okay. Thank you very much, folks. So I'd like to tell you tonight, welcome tonight. I'd like to talk about Perplexity AI. I've used this for a while. I'm a little more comfortable with it now. I wanted to share it with you. I use this several times per day. And anyway. Perplexity is an advanced AI chatbot. It delivers accurate, up-to-date, and detailed responses. Okay. Now, this uses the GPT model for language processing, with GPT meaning Generative Pre-trained Transformer. Okay. Now, this GPT model was launched 20 months ago in August 2022. Now, GPT models do not train themselves. They are pre-trained and fine-tuned with enormous amounts of data, making hundreds of gigabytes, so they can understand and generate human-like text. Let's see how we can use it. And this is one you should sign up for. It's powerful, free, easy to use, has no limits for quick searches, and surprisingly, it has no ads. So, signing up is pretty easy. You can enter your email address, or you don't need a credit card. But I try a lot of new things. I like to try various things. So I find it's easier continue with Google. I can do that in one click. And I sign in with a number of things. I don't sign in with a bank for my Google stuff, but things like this, there we go. But signing in, it is optional. You can still use it without signing in, but you get some very basic features. So for those who don't want to try signing in, let's try it. I'll log out of my Google account and try Perplexity AI. And here we are at the landing page for Perplexity AI, and I'm not signed in. So let's get right into it here. I'm going to throw in a query or a prompt. First off, I want you to notice that you do not always have to ask a question, but you have to give good context. I often tell where I live because most questions are relevant to where you live. The postal code nails it. You can see it in the search. It found me right away, and it's not right to my house, but it's pretty darn close. So I tried one on my non-logged-in account. I live in Ottawa at K2S1P6. I just threw this in randomly. Tell me all the types of turtles that live within 75 kilometers of my home. Create a table Among the names of these turtles, indicate their maximum size, preferred foods, and maximum speeds. And, well, without signing in, it gave me a list of all these turtles live near me. There was another side thing of all these photographs I can go. And one more thing, by the way, at the bottom, getting more sidetracked here. After every inquiry on Perplexity, it will always suggest three follow-up inquiries at the bottom. In most cases, you'll find one or two of these be very worthwhile. It was a random thing I threw in here. I wasn't really interested in this, but whatever you're looking for, you'll find some great content for follow-ups at the bottom of those. But anyway, there's my little thing. We can zoom into that a little better, and we'll see the – it gave me a list here, and I zoom in a little closer. See, I have a snapping turtle living near me. It can run up to 6.4 kilometers per hour. Wow. One thing was odd to me. I see that it measured the length of each turtle in carapace. I didn't know what that was. I had to ask a follow-up question. I'm sure many of you know what carapace was. It's part of the shell and such. But anyway, there you go. For folks who don't want to sign in, it does work at least a little bit. Okay. Now, let's get back to my signed-in account. I need all the help I can get and the free perks I can get. Okay, here we are. We're back, safe and signed in again. So you might ask, what can Perplexity be used for? Well, from very quick fact checks to deep research, Perplexity handles everything. It's actually quite difficult to think of anything, large or small, it cannot be used for. It's got features, accuracy, the information is up to date. It's always updating its database. It gives you quick and easy references and includes all the sources that it found with the reference. Well, the sources are verified. So you can see the verified, this information came from wherever. So this ensures transparency and trust. And lastly, it's very user-friendly. So it's great for beginners and professionals. Now the area inside the landing page here, I call it the input field. However, it's often called the Ask Anything box. In my view, this is wrong. Yes, you can ask it questions, but in most cases, you should tell this amazing assistant exactly what you want it to do. That's important. I think questions narrow your mindset, and this is an open mindset. You have to, anyway, that's my opinion here. Back to the landing page here. Let's get to the basic things here. There's a home button over there on the left-hand side. On the left also, we have the library button. You press the library button to open your library of past queries or prompts. When you're finished, press the home button again to close the library. There's a pro button. We'll come back to that later. Okay, so now, back to the input field. I pulled this out of my library, and yes, it's a question. Please tell me, where does Costco have eyeglasses made, and about their lenses and stuff. And anyway, lo and behold, it popped out lots of information here, 10 pages or so. I can tell you from experience, it's very difficult to use a mouse to copy 10 pages of data. You want to save the information. That's a lot. There's two little small icons at the bottom. I have to learn to look at these small icons, same as the one on your, Alan did on your Zoom thing. I miss these little things all the time. I finally realize they're there. It's much easier and smarter. Don't copy 10 pages. Just simply press the copy button. And we'll look into the edit query button later also. But the copy button is right there. Don't do the 10 pages like I did. Now, this one's different here. This is an inquiry about the Clarkson Farm TV series. It's a Top Gear guy that has a farm now, whatever. So this is I made this query from my tablet while watching TV, and the answer was quite lengthy. I really didn't take time to read the whole thing. It goes on for several pages. The point here is that this Clarkson Farm query was initially generated from my tablet while watching TV. And here I am showing it to you. I pulled it up on my PC by opening my Perplexity library. So the key here is once you have an account, Perplexity is synced to all your devices. You sign in with the same device on my Google account, on my phone, on my tablet, and my PC. And you'll be surprised how often you go back and review and search and edit your previous inquiries. It's very handy. You can be talking to somebody, I know about that, I researched that last week. Well, there it is, it's right there. This is all free with your account. This is an example of me telling my executive assistant what I want it to do and not asking a question. I live in Ottawa, K2S1P6. I also have an account at Amazon Canada. I'd like to buy a new inkjet printer. Please give me a list of printers available to me or near me. I'm looking for information about print quality, pages per minute, the storage, paper storage capacity, the ink storage capacity, the ink storage type, the cartridge or tank, the price and source. And I was very succinct. I want to please compile this list in a table format. And, well, the content was fantastic. It was 5 or 6 pages long, but the table format I requested made the prices very hard to read. Now, I can't say for sure, but I think that the chatbot may have been laughing at me when I did exactly as I requested. But nonetheless, this is where you want to use the edit button. I go back to the little edit button at the bottom of the page here, and I ask the chatbot to allow me to edit my original request. This time I said, please compile this in a list format. Then I press save. And the results were much better. I hope you get the idea here. The lesson here is that no matter what you create, everything can be adjusted. You can say, make it longer, make it shorter, make it funnier. If it's too complex, please rewrite this like I was in grade 5. You can just use your own words. It goes back to the blank page. My mentality is click on the box and what I want. Having your open thoughts is something that you have to get used to. You have to do that. So, anyway. Now, after you make these queries and stuff, invariably, you're going to want to share some stuff with other people. Well, there's a share button. I could copy, open a little link up, press the share button, and it'll automatically have me a little link. I can send that link to you through your email. You can in turn open my same Perplexity inquiry, and you won't have a Perplexity account. You'll see the exact same things that I do, and I think you can easily add your own questions to that. Now, it gives me the capacity on mine to allow share with Facebook or Twitter. I don't have the WhatsApp app, but I don't trust Facebook and Twitter so much, so I keep my Perplexity as a standalone unit. I don't allow Facebook to involve with Perplexity. But the big lesson here is that it's a blank screen. You change your mindset. It'll do anything you want. You can say, why is my Samsung clothes dryer model 102 making a rumbling noise? Write me a limerick for a birthday card using these special words. Or give me instruction manual how to change a tire or a motor. I know Jeff does these things, so I got to mention that. I don't know how Jeff does his, but I made a newsletter for our neighborhood in the wintertime. I gathered up 6, 7, or 8 little neighborhood events. They were barely in sentence format. It was virtually unreadable. I had 3 photographs. I didn't upload them, but I told it what the photographs were of. And I explained my intent. I told it to organize this mess into a newsletter. The results were amazing. I printed it off in a hard copy. It was for like a private local area thing. And I did that. And then, of course, I could probably edit it a little bit too. And it was amazing. So I'll show you one more feature here, but the blank page, get your head around that. The blank page, I can't say it enough. You sit there and look at it, it's like WordPerfect 20 years ago. You get a blue screen, what do? I was stumped. I'm back there again. The blank page is a big one. So one more feature, the Pro button. Here it is. Now, usually a quick search is all you need. Put in good context, and that's all you need. But with the free account, you have the Pro button here. If you want to turn the power on of the Pro button, the lights in the house won't dim, and it'll then seek your little additional input. Whatever you put in, it'll ask you additional input and give you a powerful response back. But the Pro search is reload for the free account every 4 hours. I always used to save some things for the Pro account. Then I find very, very cheap. I wanted to save those things. But the free quick search does almost everything. Just give it lots of information in the beginning. So in summary, here we have it. We have Perplexity AI, the free version. You don't need a credit card. There's no ads, no advertising. You have unlimited quick searches. You can do that 100 times a day. I'm not sure if I've topped that one yet, but you get the Pro searches. You get 5 per day. I'm not sure how that works. I don't use it very often. I didn't show you. I haven't even tried it myself yet. You can upload 3 files per day, PDFs or images. I haven't even tried that one yet. The Pro version does a little more. I can't imagine what it would do for me. But the free version does all that I really wanted. Anyway, thank you very much. That's my take on Perplexity AI. Hope you try it and enjoy it.
Thanks very much, Bob. Bob says, great presentation. Thanks.
Thank you. Here we go. Perplexity.ai, folks. Thank you very much.
Tom says, you're a super presenter.
Thank you very much, Tom. Well, I get out of there and I'll...
So let everybody try Perplexity and they can do a follow-up for us sometime.
Very good. Thank you. Look forward to that.
Okay. Thanks again, Bob.
Thank you.
Okay, next. Go ahead.
Yes. I just did a search on with my name in Perplexity. And apparently I work for a transition firm as a CEO in Toronto. I have never worked in Toronto. So I'm just wondering where this information came from. Is that falsified information?
Well, it could be another person with your name.
Or are you getting your salary?
Anyway. I tried other things, Bob, and it's great.
Very good.
Good information for the questions I asked. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, it should give you the source where it got that from, though, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a little subtle number, like a 1 or 2 or 3 or a 4. It should give you, it will give you the source it pulled that from.
Okay.
It'll be there.
I will look for that. Thanks.
Probably got it from ChatGPT.
Yeah, right.
Okay, next up we have a share from Glenn, and Chris is going to talk to it. Oh, sorry, going the wrong way.
Yeah, so this came in from Glenn, and he was reading an article, and the URL is there, and let me just paste that into the chat. So it was a new vulnerability in Wi-Fi that was found, and he was wondering a little bit about it. And it talked about prerequisites for this attack to be successfully employed. And basically, the victim wants to connect to a trusted Wi-Fi network. You have a rogue network that is made available by an attacker. And an important point is it has with the same authentication credentials as the first one. And the attacker also has to be within range in order to prevent an authentication in the middle attack between the victim and the trusted network. Next. So more details are at that website if you want to read into the details about it. So he wanted to know with this, if it really is a problem, does the second prerequisite, which was the rogue network, had to be available with the same authentication credentials as the first network, does that mean that the operator of the rogue network has to already know the credentials for the trusted network? And my understanding from reading the article is, yes, they would absolutely have to know the Wi-Fi password, essentially, for the trusted network when they set up their rogue network. Next. And then he asked, can the rogue network with the same SSID, and that's the one of the main tricks about it, is that the rogue network has to be brought up with the same network name, the service set identifier, as the trusted network. Can it read the authentication credentials that is submitted by your device that is trying to connect to that trusted network? And my understanding is no. I'm pretty sure of that, but the article does not specifically mention that one way or the other. But I'm pretty sure that there's no way for a rogue network to actually get your credentials to the good network just by coming up with the same network name. Next. And then he said, or questioned, if the two networks have the same SSID, which is a requirement for this attack to work, which network will your device try to connect to? And he wondered, is it the network with the strongest signal strength? And typically with Wi-Fi, that is the case. If you have an SSID conflict or two access points that have the same network name, you will try to connect to the one with the strongest signal. But there's one caveat to that, and because 5 gigahertz networks and 2.4 gigahertz networks work a little bit differently. 2.4 gigahertz networks gives you larger distance from the access point. 5 gigahertz gives you a shorter distance but higher speed. And I think if both have a strong signal, typically your Wi-Fi device will prefer the 5 gigahertz over the 2.4 gigahertz in order to get access to that extra speed. Next. So I read this article a number of times, and I tried to make heads or tails of the whole thing. And I'm wondering, is this really a problem or not? Now, unfortunately, a lot of security firms will be always trying to make a name for themselves by finding vulnerabilities, whether they are of any significance or not. I find it really hard to see if this is really a serious vulnerability. If you take a look at it, the attacker has to actually run a rogue access point with the same SSID as a trusted network or one that is protected by a passkey. They have to know the credentials for the other network, and then they have to hope that clients will try to connect to their rogue network rather than the trusted network. That's a bit of a stretch, I think. Next. So if I was an attacker, and I happen to know the login credentials to that trusted network, why don't I just connect to that existing network and do whatever bad things I want to do? I mean, why do I have to go and intercept another computer that is connecting to the trusted network? Now, the article does go into some detail about the idea that it's possible to get trick advice into giving up unencrypted data. And that's where there is one thing that is a maybe on this. Next. So the article does identify a problem that can happen. And it can, if you are using a VPN, VPNs, some of them, have the functionality that they will auto-disable if they're on a trusted network. And this particular vulnerability would allow that to happen where you're connecting with a VPN, and because you think you're connecting to a trusted network, it'll actually turn off the VPN functionality, and therefore your traffic could actually be sniffed, presumably. And that would leave the victim's traffic to be exposed. But, next, is that really a problem? I don't know. I don't think so, because when you think about it, Most VPN clients are, first off, unlikely to auto-disable on trusted networks. I've never personally come across a VPN client that does that. Even if it does turn off, most web traffic is end-to-end encrypted. And if you think about it, in case of most people connecting to Wi-Fi networks just randomly, they're probably doing web browsing more so than anything else. A lot of other traffic is now also encrypted end-to-end. So I think that it's probably not actually a real serious concern. Next. So there could be some unencrypted traffic that does get exposed if you're using a VPN client that is set to auto-downgrade or turn itself off if you're connected to a trusted network. So possibly some unencrypted traffic would get exposed. Technically, yes, I think there is a vulnerability. Practically, wow, I just have a lot more to worry about than that. So I don't know. If anybody else has a different take on it, I really would like to hear it. It's just I really don't see this particular vulnerability as being something to be all that concerned about. And kudos for Glenn for bringing it forward, because I think a lot of people will look at these sort of things and say, oh, wow, and start freaking out that they have to do something weird to protect themselves. But in this case, I think it's really a non-issue.
Okay, thanks, Chris. There's nothing in the chat yet on that issue.
Okay.
So moving along, more homework. A couple of questions came in late in the day, so I haven't really, Chris and I haven't had a chance to take a look at them.
Oh, stupid.
But maybe somebody else has some information. One of them was that Google has recently announced a new service, which they call Find My Device. The question was this a good thing or not? And basically it's to find, or if you lose your phone, you can secure it, or you can erase the content on it if you lost it completely, sort of thing. So I've got no experience, personally I've got no experience with that kind of thing. If anybody knows anything about it, you can tell us all about it now, or and we'd love to hear a follow-up at the next Q&A session next week. So that's Google's Find My Device system.
I think this is I think they've gotten together with Apple, and so every Android phone with a new operating system is also going to report devices and do everything similarly to Apple with its Apple ID. But the Google one will also handle other things like Tile and maybe some other things like that. I'm not sure, but I haven't looked into it. But that's what I've seen, by the way.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, Karen has a comment saying that she received that message too, did a quick read on the content, and chose to shut it off.
I don't think it, on my machine, on my phone, it wasn't enabled, so I had to sign on to enable it. So at least it's turned off by default on my phone.
if it functions similarly to the Apple software, then it may be advisable to leave it on, because if you're worried about being tracked for any reason, like someone wants your car or wants to attack you in some way, then I expect that the Find Device will also give you warnings of devices that are following you that are not yours, that you haven't entered into the system, and they'll warn you about them, and they will, for at least for an Apple ID, for an Apple tag, they will tell the Apple tag to go beep 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 so you can find it. That's my impression, but I haven't looked into it in detail, so I'm just guessing at this.
Yeah, one of the problems I saw was there's a whole raft of requirements. One of them was that you have to switch the location on. And the problem I have is that runs my battery down, so I prefer to turn that thing off. Okay, second question was about Firefox. B has installed the most recent version and has been offered all kinds of different add-ons and there's a whole raft of different settings. And she wants to know which add-ons are useful, and if anybody has any advice on setting up Firefox. So if you're using the latest version and you know the answers to those questions, we'd like to hear about those too. So you've got lots of homework. The questions on the icons on the chat window, the Find My Device, and Firefox setup. So we'll be interested to hear all about those next week.
And B, I would suggest that if you saw some that you thought looked promising, let us know what ones you thought looked promising, and that can be helpful as well, mm-hmm. where people may chime in saying that they know something that'll do equivalent functionality in a better way, or it's risky, or it's great, or whatever. So, I mean, there certainly are millions of add-ons to browsers, yeah. but if anybody, you know, wants to throw out that they're using a certain one or considering a certain one, and want other people's opinions, be a great forum for it.
Okay, they gave a list of ones that they recommended, or they were recommended by people who work for Firefox or something like that. But it was quite a wide range of things that
okay. I agreed.
So, yeah, I'll have a look at them and choose the ones that I thought might sounded like they yeah. might be useful.
The ones that are recommended by Firefox are just, they're recommended not because necessarily what they do, but rather that they do whatever they do safely. So there are a variety of things. I would suggest the first thing you install be uBlock Origin, which will get rid of ads and make your browsing much safer. And there's a bunch of others that I've done to customizations and add-ons I've done to Firefox. I'll bring that next week. Or the week after, I guess.
I mean, some of them look pretty amazing if they really work. So, yeah, it'd be great to find out what you're using. That would be awesome.
Okay.
Okay, so going back to WhatsApp, there are a couple of comments in the chat earlier on. Karen, who's not a big fan of Facebook, not a big fan of Meta, she says, she's used WhatsApp for years, despite not being a fan of Meta, so I guess that's a recommendation. And Tom notes that it's good for chat, voice, and video with one person or many. You can send files or pictures. It is encrypted. It shows check marks if stuff has been received. You can set up groups. You do need to give a phone number, and it can read your contacts, your Google contacts. Okay, so we're in the last two now. Anybody have any other questions or comments on things we've talked about?
Actually, one other thing I was remiss in the early part, Alan, where you were talking about the chat in Zoom and how hitting enter would cause it to send the message. Tom noted that if you're on multiple lines, you can use shift enter, which will allow you to continue on a new line. And I noted as well that you can also do multi-line by entering all your text into an editor with blank lines or line breaks or whatever, and then just select all and paste it into the chat window, and it will actually respect the line breaks if you do that as well.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done the second one. I can never remember those keyboard shortcuts. So.
Yeah, I never remember whether it's Control Enter or Shift Enter or Alt Enter, and I invariably hit the wrong one and it goes and sends it.
Okay, so if anybody has any other questions, put them in the chat or open your mic. In the meantime, let me just remind you that coming up in June, 2 weeks in fact, June the 12th, our regular June meeting will actually be our pizza queue. We'll be at the trolley station in Britannia Park in the west end, I guess, a little bit. But if you want to go and have pizza available to you, then you really need to register. So send Jocelyn an email to this address here, pizzaparty@opcug.ca. If you're a member, register yourself, and you're allowed to register guests. And special breaking news. Yeah, you remember that Chris's backup singer to Shania Twain is going to be singing karaoke. Well, he's now going to be joined on the karaoke stage by no other than Bob Harris, according to the CBT News. So, not to be missed on June the 12th. Pizza, cupcakes, and soft drinks, and karaoke night, apparently. That's something to look forward to. And in the meantime, next week, next Wednesday, is just our regular Q&A session. You've got lots of homework for next week, so I expect to see lots of people chipping in with feedback and all those questions. And no doubt we'll find some other topics and people will send questions in, and we'll have lots of information for you next week. So hope everybody enjoyed the stuff we had tonight, and we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday. That's it for me.
Just a comment for Bob on Perplexity. I have my microphone working now, I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm going to give Perplexity a try with the breaking news, as Bob's already seen some of them. I'll send a link through the forum. I believe it'll be early. I found a bone, presumably from the dog when I was digging in the garden today. but I suspect it's probably from an early hominid. So we'll have something with Perplexity, see what it says about how old the paleontologists and Dr. Phibbs says this is.
It's a big foot bone, no doubt, right?
No, it's no Sasquatch, but I think it might be an early hominid that maybe 20,000 years. We'll see.
good stuff, Jeff. I've had a couple of glitches with that. I've done some devious things, whatever you guys have even seen. Like you do too. Make sure you stress that what you're doing is fictional. And sometimes it refuses to do what I ask. It's too far-fetched. And make sure you stress it's fictional for a fictional prank, and you're more likely to get a little farther.
Well, I do have an image of a Bigfoot riding the Loch Ness Monster. So
cool.
It's very rare. Very rare photo.
I'm impressed, Bob. You're telling me that AI actually does have some intelligence.
Yes. I tried to give, I won't say too much here. I tried to generate a fictional automotive thing from the province of Ontario. I won't say more than that. And I had to stress that this is for a fictional fun for a friend. And I did an official newsletter format. And it looked like it was a hard copy someone received. And anyway, but I had to tell her that this is not serious stuff. It's just for a fun thing. Because initially it blocked me out. It said, no, we can't do this kind of stuff. So you got to be careful. It knows me. And Jeff, I'll warn about Jeff too.
I did use it to, I did use the breaking news interface to generate at Vidnos to generate an announcement for an upcoming thing at the seniors, and it did a really good job. So it really is a useful tool, the Vidnos. But I'm going to give this. I'm really enjoying, by the way, all of the AI stuff you're doing, because there's so much of it out there, and when you introduce it, and it's like, oh, I'll give that a, you know, it prompts me to go investigate. So I've been having a lot of fun with it.
You're right. As you know, Jeff, the VidNose requires a script, and I give it the script that I suggest and make this more emphatic, or make it more whatever, make it shorter or longer. And you can tell it exactly what you want and put it in five times. It'll make it better and better and better for you.
What I did find, I had a little bit of trouble editing in VidNOS. What I would, if I wanted to add a slide similar, I would duplicate the slide, and you can move them up and down the same as you can in PowerPoint. But yes, because it was duplicated, I couldn't actually copy it. I had to duplicate it. And then when, unless you change the order and put like a spacer in between it, what happens is when you edit slide two, you end up editing slide one. But if you slide it down to position three, you can change it as much as you want. It won't change, and then move it back up into two. So it takes a little getting used to, but it's quite interesting. Like, it's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, I've seen, not too long here, I went through the avatars and reviewed them one time. And then a few days later, I saw an avatar and said, I know that guy because he was an avatar from VidNOS, but it, I think it was a telecom ad. And it was one of the avatars from, I had recognized the guy. And so they're using it also. Now, they have no label, no little watermark, as you and I had the watermark. But it's being used a lot. You can see why. It's cheap. I mean, $20-some dollars a month, a little more for a business, that's nothing.
Oh, absolutely. And the quality is the quality of it is pretty shocking. It's very shocking.
Yeah, the 720p is enough. That's what we're both using as a free account, and that's fine.
Oh, absolutely. I like I say, I've been having lots of fun with it between the nuclear fish and the UFO sightings and of course Sasquatch on a Harley. It's been lots of fun.
And you can get around some of the restrictions that AI will put on people, as Dilbert found out, as I'm sharing on the screen there. Oh, there, that one.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, he's got to trick it, and away you go. Anyhow, that's it for tonight, folks. So we will see you next week.